சக்ஷூரும் மிலிதம் ஜேன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குருவே நமஹ. மூகம் கருதி வாசலம் பங்குலம் கயதே கிரிம் யக்ருபாதமஹம் வந்தே ஸ்ரீ குரு தினதரிணம். வம்சகாபத்ருப்யஶ்சா க்ருபாசிந்துப்யைவ ச பதிதானம் பவனேப்யோ வைஷ்ணவேப்யோ நமோ நமஹ. ஸ்ரீகிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபு நிதானந்த ஷத்வைத கதாதர ஸ்ரீவாஸ்ரி கௌர பக்தவிந்த. ஹரே கிருஷ்ண ஹரே கிருஷ்ண 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 ஹரே ஹரே, ஹரே ராம ஹரே ராம 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 ஹரே ஹரே. So I've been away from Mayapur for 10 months and I'm very happy to be back and honored to be in your association and honored to be able to speak something. So we are reading from the fourth canto, chapter 21, text 42.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Yat brahma nityam virajam sanatanam shraddha tapaha mangala mona samyamai samadhina bhrati ha artha drishtaye yatra idam யத்ராமித்யம் விரஜம் சநாதனம் ஸ்ரத்தா தபோ மங்கள மௌன சம்யமாய சமாதினா விவ்ரதி ஹர்த
ரிஷ்டயே
யத்ரேதம் அத்ஹர்ஷ இவாவவஸ்ஸதே யத்ப்ராஹ்ம நித்யம் விரஜம் சநாதனம் ஸ்ரத்தா தபோ மங்கள மௌன சம்யமாய சமாதினா விவ்ரதி ஹர்த
த்ருஷ்டயே
யத்ரேதம் அத்ஹர்ஷ இவாவவஸ்ஸதே யத்ப்ராஹ்ம நித்யம் விரஜா சநாதனம்
சநாதனம்
ஸ்ரத்தா தபோ மங்கள மௌன சம்யமாய சமாதினா விவ்ரதி ஹர்த
த்ருஷ்டயே
யத்ரேதம் அத்ஹர்ஷ இவாவவஸ்ஸதே.
யத்ராஹ்ம நித்யம் விரஜம் சநாதனம்
Sridhata-bho-mangalam-mona-samyamai Samadhi-na-bhin-bhati-hartha-dhrishtaye Yatre-dama-darsani-bhava-vasate Brahmanityam virajam sanatanam Jashanatanam Shadhatipo Mangala Mona Samyamai Samadina Bhidhati Harta Krishtaye Kredamadarshani Vava Vashtase Brahmanityam virajashanatanam Shadhatapo mangalam mauna samyamai Samadina bhivrati hartha dhrishtaye Yatredam adharshati avabhashate Yam viraja sunatanam Shadhatapo mangalam mauna samyamai Samadina bhivrati harta dhrishtaye
Word means yat That which, Brahma, the Brahminical culture, Nityam, eternally, Virajam, without contamination, Sanatanam, without beginning, Shraddha, faith, Tapaha, austerity. Mangala, auspicious, Mona, silence, Samyamai, controlling the mind and senses, Samadhina, with full concentration, Bibhati, illuminates, Ha, as he did it. Harta, the real purpose of the Vedas. Drishtaye,
for the purpose of finding out.
Yatra,
wherein.
Idam,
all this.
Adharshe,
in a mirror.
Eva,
like.
Avabhasate,
manifest.
Translation. In Brahminical culture, a Brahmana's transcendental position is eternally maintained because the injunctions of the Vedas are accepted with faith, austerity, scriptural conclusions, full sense and mind control, and meditation. In this way, the real goal of life is illuminated. Just as one's face is fully reflected in a clear mirror. So why don't we repeat? In Brahminical culture, a Brahmana's transcendental position is eternally maintained because the injunctions of the Vedas are accepted. With faith, austerity.
With faith, austerity.
Scriptural conclusions.
Full sense and mind control.
And meditation.
In
this way, the real goal of life is illuminated.
Just as one's face is fully reflected
in a mirror. So, this is a long purport. So what I did is I created subheadings, like they do in Back to Godhead magazine, in the articles. So I think I created 4 subheadings. So the first subheading is entitled Imitation Brahmanism. So I'm reading the purport, but I've added subheadings. Someone may say, now I'm adulterating Prabhupada's books, but it's only for this class. Imitation Brahmanism. Since it is described in the previous verse that feeding a living Brahmana is more effective than oblations in a fire sacrifice, in this verse it is now clearly described what Brahmanism is and who is a Brahmana, or who a Brahmana is. In the age of Kali, in other words, if you're going to feed a Brahmin, you have to know who a Brahmana is that you're going to feed. In this age of Kali, taking advantage of the fact that by feeding a Brahmana, one obtains a more effective result than by performing sacrifices, a class of men with no Brahminical qualifications claim the eating privilege known as Brahmana Bhojana, simply on the basis of their birth in Brahmana families. In order to distinguish this class of men from the real Brahmanas, Maharaj Prithu is giving an exact description of a Brahmana and Brahminical culture. One should not take advantage of his position simply to live like a fire without light. So we go back to the verse. What did he describe? He said, well, this is how you know who is a Brahman. Because a Brahman accepts the Vedas with faith, he performs austerity, he follows the scripture, he is fully in control of his senses and mind, and he's engaged, absorbed in meditation on Krishna or Brahman. And his heart is pure. So many of you know, Prabhupada tells about the beggar, householder beggar, who would dress up in saffron, go out to his begging spot, make his collection, and bring it home. Change his clothes. Because people respect the saffron color. So you could see in Vedic culture, there are so many opportunities to take advantage. Here's just one. And as if you're really crooked, you can go very high. You can become guru, so-called. So the next section is called Qualification of a Brahman. He is a devotee. So now Prabhupada, if you've been following the last verses, Prabhupada, when he refers to Brahmins, he always said Brahmana or Vaishnava. He wasn't making a distinction. So he continues that thought. A Brahmana must be fully conversant with the Vedic conclusion, which is described in Bhagavad Gita. Vedashta sararaham eva vidya. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. The Vedic conclusion, the ultimate understanding or Vedanta understanding, is knowledge of Krishna. Actually, this is a fact because simply by understanding Krishna as he is, as described in Bhagavad Gita, janma karma chame divyam evam jo beti tattataha, one becomes a perfect Brahmana. The Brahmana who knows Krishna perfectly well is always in a transcendental position. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Mam chayogi babi charena bhakti yogena sevate sa gunan sambhatityayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service and who does not fall down in any circumstance at once transcends the modes of material nature and then comes to the level of Brahman. So, real Brahmana is a devotee. In the next section, I entitled it, or subtitled it, A Devotee is a Brahmana and Free from 4 Defects because he speaks Krishna's words. Therefore, a devotee of Lord Krishna is actually a perfect brahmana. His situation is transcendental, for he is free from the four defects of conditional life, which are the tendencies to commit mistakes, to be illusioned, to cheat, and to possess imperfect senses. A perfect Vaishnav, or Krishna-conscious person, is always in this transcendental position because he speaks according to Krishna and his representative. Because Vaishnavas speak exactly according to the tune of Krishna, whatever they say is free from these four defects. For example, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that everyone should always think of him, everyone should become his devotee, offer him obeisances, worship him, and ultimately everyone should surrender unto him. These devotional activities are transcendental and free from mistakes, illusion, cheating, and imperfection. Therefore, anyone who is a sincere devotee of Lord Krishna and who preaches this cult, speaking only on the basis of Krishna's instructions, is understood to be virajam, or free from the defects of material contamination. A genuine brahmana or Vaishnava therefore depends eternally on the conclusion of the Vedas or Vedic versions presented by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Only from Vedic knowledge can we understand the actual position of the Absolute Truth, who, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, is manifested in three features, namely impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and at last the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This knowledge is perfect from time immemorial, and the Brahminical or Vaishnav culture depends on this principle eternally. As we know, many of us know, what did Prabhupada say was his formula for success? Why was he successful? In regard to what we're reading here, what was his success formula? If you wanted to copy his successful formula, I just repeated the words of my spiritual master. So that seems pretty simple, right? Except the problem is we're all very creative. So just to repeat gets boring. We want to add some spice to it. And we tend to be proud. So what seems like a very simple thing here is what Prabhupada is addressing, this tendency to be creative and create your own philosophy to become a distinguished muni. So just this fidelity or chastity to the guru is where all the power exists. But as Kali Yuga progresses, we know that people have so many ideas. Actually, I was reading a book, and in this book, this person was quoting the Vedas, but they gave their translation and understanding, which was completely off. It couldn't have been more off if you purposely tried to make it off. Like, how off can we make this from what it means? So that's what you find in Kali Yuga. It's just like, it's very whimsical. It's just what it feels like to me. I read a verse and it feels this way, so this is what it is. And it supports, it's like science. You see something and you say, oh, this supports my theory. But the real scientist sees something and creates a theory. Because if you have the theory, your vision becomes obscured because you're trying to fit pieces into the theory. So if you have a theory and then you read the Vedas, then you fit it in. Oh, this is what it must mean this, because this is my theory. And I want some authority there, so I'll quote the Vedas. So the next section, know the Vedas in order to help others. One should therefore study the Vedas with faith, not only for one's personal knowledge, but for the sake of spreading this knowledge and these activities through real faith in the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Vedas. So in this sense, what Prabhupada's saying here, if you have the Vedas and you don't give it, then what are you doing? You're basically cheating people out of their right to learn the Absolute Truth. And you come along and get in the way and throw in your own idea. So this is a great injustice. There one time, there was a conversation with a professor, and he was a Hindu, professor of Hinduism. So Prabhupada said, so what is Hinduism? And the professor said, I don't know. So of course Prabhupada didn't miss a beat and he said, you're a professor of Hinduism? and you don't know what Hinduism is? And he turned to Sarup Damodar and said, Sarup Damodar, what does that mean? What is he? What, he said, Sarup Prabhupada said, Sarup Damodar, what is he? He said, cheater, Prabhupada. A devotee was in the room and he told me this. But now that I'm remembering, I was in a room at another time and the same thing happened. There was another professor and he said the same thing. I don't know. And the prophet said, you don't know, and this is cheating. So this is the idea. If we don't know and we say we don't know, that's honest. Right? Just like you ask directions. Everyone will tell you where to go, even if they don't know. Isn't it? Yeah, you just go there, and you go there, and you're totally lost, because he didn't know. But he didn't want to say he didn't know. And then you're cursing. Why couldn't you just tell me you didn't know? I would have asked someone who knows. But he couldn't say he didn't know. He had to tell you. So, in the Krishna consciousness movement, this potential will always be there to threaten Siddhanta. There'll always be something that's going to be slightly... Someone's going to come along and say, but it appears this way. And someone else is going to hear it and repeat it, and pretty soon it's going to be a Prabhupada said. Till someone comes along and says, I never heard Prabhupada say that. But it can happen. One devotee tells a story that he was on a morning walk with Prabhupada and he heard Prabhupada say something, and for so many years he was repeating in his classes what Prabhupada was saying until one day he heard a recording of that morning walk and realized he heard it incorrectly. So that's just the nature of how things go. They go in the ear and they get filtered, and between the filter and the poor memory sometimes it comes out differently than it went in. So as disciples, we have to be careful. So the next section, favorable and unfavorable for devotional service. The word mangala, auspicious, in this verse is very significant. Srila Sridhar Swami quotes that to do what is good and to reject what is not good is called mangala, or auspicious. So, does a little child like good advice? You should do this because it's good, and you should not do this because it's not good. Do they like to hear that? No. I'll do what I want. Don't tell me what to do. So we're all a bit like that. Do you like good advice? Well, if it suits your sense gratification, yeah. But what if the good advice goes against it? Do you like it? You can be reading a purport and something can go right over your head because you don't like it. You know that? Prabhu, did you hear that in the purport? No, I missed it. Why did you miss it? I didn't want to do that. It just To do what is good means to accept everything favorable to the discharge of devotional service, and to reject what is not good means to reject everything not favorable for the discharge of devotional service. When I was a teenager, I wanted to be a rock and roll star. So I wrote Prabhupada and said, we could become rock and roll stars for Krishna. And Prabhupada wrote me a letter back, something I didn't want to hear. He said, don't try to be famous. Make Krishna famous. He said, this is all phantasmagoria. It'll never happen. So you think I wanted to hear that? But somehow or other, by Krishna's mercy, I accepted it. So if we are attached, we don't want to hear some good advice. But mangala means to accept good advice, because good advice is auspicious. And good advice means we're going to have to give up something that we're attached to and move on, right? Die to live. Progress means what? You give up something that you're attached to, you move on, you accept something. Maybe that you didn't want to accept, but you accept it. This is progress. In our Krishna conscious movement, we accept this principle by rejecting four prohibited items, namely illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and flesh eating, and accepting the daily chanting of at least 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and daily meditation 3 times a day by chanting the Gayatri Mantra. This way, one can keep his brahminical culture and spiritual strength intact. By following these principles of devotional service strictly, chanting 24 hours a day the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. One makes positive progress in spiritual life and ultimately becomes completely fit to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. One makes positive progress in spiritual life and ultimately becomes completely fit to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Wow. That's not much to pay, is it? Now, let's see how the battery's going. All right. The next section is called, well, now Prabhupada's following up. The next section is called See Krishna. Because the ultimate goal of studying or understanding the Vedic knowledge is to find Krishna, one who follows the Vedic principles as described above can from the very beginning see all the features of Lord Krishna, the Absolute Truth, very distinctly, as one can see one's own face completely reflected in a clear mirror. Prabhupada is explaining how when our senses become purified, we'll see Krishna. And we'll appreciate Krishna in devotional service, particularly in his name. So the next section is entitled Qualification. It's almost over. If you're getting antsy or anything, you know what antsy means? We say in America you have ants in your pants because the ants are biting, and that's antsy. Qualifications of a Brahmana. He has the qualities of a Brahmana mentioned in Shastra. The conclusion is, therefore, that a Brahmana does not become a Brahmana simply because he is a living entity or is born in a Brahmin family. In other words, because we're spirit, Brahman doesn't mean we become Brahmana because he's a living entity, or is born in a Brahmana family. He must possess all the qualities mentioned in the Shastras and practice the Brahminical principles in life. So this is interesting because Prabhupada has criticized Brahmins without qualification. And following in the footsteps of Prabhupada as preachers, we often do the same. We say it's not by birth, it's by guna, by quality. Right? So often, Prabhupada would say, now in the Krishna conscious movement, we have initiated Brahmins, and they're not following the principles. So now how can we criticize these other Brahmins? We ourselves don't follow. You know, we become hypocrites. Of course, we never think that way. We tend to think about the problems of other people. But here Prabhupada's showing, this is hypocrisy. You've been initiated as a Brahmin. Now, here we see all the qualities, Brahminical qualities mentioned in the Shastras, this is Brahman. So how can you say, oh, Brahman, not by birth, by quality, and you have a thread, and then you don't manifest or practice or live according to those principles? We can't say that unless we live it. We'll have no Shakti to say it. It becomes hypocrisy. So Prabhupada made that point more than once. So the next section, practicing Brahminical principles, one becomes Krishna conscious. See, the interesting thing about this is that sometimes a devotee comes to Krishna consciousness and they don't feel that they're a Brahmin. They feel that they fit somewhere else. Which may be true, but those are becoming initiated. Those are taking seriously. Then you can see from this progression, we have to develop Brahminical qualities because Vaishnava means Brahminical quality. I was in the airport a few months ago and I met a soldier who just got out of basic training. And we were going down the escalator and he turned to me and he said, I haven't slept in 72 hours. And I was thinking, if I haven't slept in 72 hours, I wouldn't even be able to stand up. And then he turns around and he says, I can't wait to go to Iraq. I just got out of basic training and I can't wait to go to Iraq. That's Kshatriya. And I was thinking when I was a college student, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was to go to Vietnam. So that's Kshatriya spirit. But if that person becomes a devotee and becomes initiated, he may work according to his Kshatriya spirit, but he's got to develop these qualities if he's a Vaishnava. Can't say, I'm a Kshatriya. I just yell and scream at everybody. We can't say that. Maybe you yell and scream at those who are against Krishna, but not at Krishna's devotees. So, practicing Brahminical principles, one becomes Krishna conscious. Thus, he ultimately becomes a fully Krishna conscious person and can understand what Krishna is. How a devotee continually sees Krishna face to face within his heart is described in Brahma Samhita. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochane na shandasa daiva ridaye chubiloka yanti yam sham shundaram achinta gunasharupam govindamari prusham tamaham bhajami. Perfection of the Brahminical culture. The devotee, by development of pure love for Krishna, constantly sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Shyam Sundar, within his heart. That is the perfection of Brahminical culture. Wow, there it is, right there. The perfection of Brahminical culture is to see Krishna. So the next section... The purport's over, but I have something else here. Well, let me tell a story. When I was reading this, I was thinking about this point, that sometimes devotees feel that either it's not my nature to be Brahminical, to have these qualities, or they feel that due to their past conditioning, they don't naturally manifest these qualities. And they'll see another devotee and say, well, so-and-so Prabhu, he's sadhu-bhushana, he's naturally a saint. Actually, if you go on YouTube, there's a very nice interview with Radhanath Swami's father. And they said, what was he like when he was young? He said, well, we got a new car, and we drove somewhere, and he saw his friends who were a little poorer than we were. So he slid down in the back of the car. And I said, what was his name, Richard or Richie? I said, Richie, why are you sliding down the back of the car? And he said, because I don't want my friends to see me in this car because they're poor and they might feel bad. So he was sadhu, you know. He was already sadhu. So you might think, well, someone like Radhanath Swami, he's sadhu, but me, I'm not sadhu. And now I become Krishna, I come to the Krishna consciousness movement and we're asked to be Brahmins, but I'm so conditioned. I just don't know how to do it. I can't do it. And we can write it off and say, well, if it happens by Krishna's mercy, it'll happen, but otherwise... And then you can write it off with this verse, Yasasti Bhakti or Bhagavata Kinchana. When I become a pure devotee, then Sarva, Sarva Guna Samasate Sura, then all the good qualities of the demigods will manifest. So until then, you just have to tolerate me. Because in one sense, it does appear that that's what the verse says, that only these good qualities will develop by bhakti. And I'm just a green mango now. So I don't have good qualities. And if they come, if I ever become pure and they come, they'll come. So I like to tell some stories that counter this idea, because this is not the right idea. Because if we think that this is what I am, I'm conditioned in a particular way, and this is just the reality, then we accept that conditioning. We don't do anything about it. And then we just act according to it. And then we think, well, what else can I do? This is who I am. Right? What did we hear yesterday? Was it yesterday? Prabhupada said, my spiritual master made me a diamond and I will make you diamonds. So that's Prabhupada's service, to make us diamonds. So, very nice story. Oh, there's three very nice stories. I think there's four, but I can only remember three. Hawaii, I don't know what the year was. There was a devotee who was running the restaurant, and all of a sudden he claimed to the management of the temple, this is my restaurant. It was a temple restaurant. He claimed proprietorship over the restaurant. So when Prabhupada came, they had a meeting. So Prabhupada said, bring him in. So they brought him in. He said, so, you are my disciple? Yes, Srila Prabhupada. So, everything I have belongs to you? Yes, Srila Prabhupada. So who does the restaurant belong to? It's mine, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, okay, take it and be happy. He gave him the restaurant. So, you could imagine, the management of the temple was not happy. So they had a meeting with Prabhupada, and they were saying, Prabhupada, we should take him to court. We should get the restaurant back. And Prabhupada said, if you take him to court, what is the difference between you and an ordinary karmi? Let him have the restaurant. Let him be happy. So Prabhupada he made that point. He said, you're acting like an ordinary person. So what's the difference? That you're claiming to be a Vaishnava, then you act like an ordinary person. So what's the difference between you and so-and-so? No, I have a reason to act like an ordinary person. We think. So Prabhupada's point, no, you don't act like an ordinary person. So there's another story, ordinary person story. I may have told this before, but for those who haven't heard it before, I will tell it. And I can't remember if I've told it. And I can't remember if I did even tell it, if those who heard it can remember it. So usually it takes three times to remember. But this is another ordinary story. So when Prabhupada was present on the planet on airplanes, they had smoking sections and no smoking sections. So naturally Prabhupada sat in the no smoking section. And on this one flight, they were sitting in the no smoking section was a soccer team who were very rowdy, and they decided they had the right to smoke in the no smoking section because they were the soccer team. So they began smoking, and Prabhupada's secretary called the flight attendant and asked the flight attendant to ask the soccer players to please not smoke because they're in the no smoking section, and they were asked to stop smoking. Later on during the flight, the soccer players decided to smoke again. And Prabhupada's servant decided to call the flight attendant. And when he called the flight attendant, Prabhupada said, just tolerate. If you cannot tolerate, he said, don't be like an ordinary person. Tolerate. Nice, isn't it? Don't be like an ordinary person. Tolerate. Now, I wanted to read to you some of the qualities of a devotee. And it's interesting, if you go to the Gita, right, where do you find these lists of qualities? You go to the 12th chapter, the last four or five verses. It's just lists of qualities of a devotee. And then you go to the 13th chapter, and it describes the process of knowledge, which is just a list of good qualities. And then you go to the divine and demoniac nature chapter, which is 16, and there's a whole list of divine qualities. And I thought it would be nice to read these qualities. But before I do, I have to support my argument with Shastra. And this is interesting, because Prabhupada is making the point of how we need to develop these qualities. But this is in 1966. So, Prabhupada says, so how you can become saintly person? So these qualities, 26 qualities, they are called saintly person. Devotee means to become fully qualified with all the noble qualities. Devotee does not mean a rascal, at the same time a devotee. No. As soon as you become devotee, the test is that all those 26 qualities will develop. I'll read that again because that's important. As soon as you become devotee, the test is that all those 26 qualities will develop. You have to test yourself. out of the 26 qualities, how much I have developed. When was the last time you tested yourself? Prabhu, I don't even know what the 26 are. What to speak of testing myself? Well, we'll read them so you know. Out of the 26 qualities, how much I have developed. If I am lacking, then you must know that you are not developing. This is the test. What are the qualities? In 1972, Prabhupada was giving a lecture on the teachings of Queen Kunti. I happened to be there, and he said the same thing. He was describing the qualities of a Vaishnava, and he said, you should see how your qualities are developing. It's kind of a paradox, because one may think, well, if I'm becoming humble, I can't say my humility is developing. That would be a paradox. But there is, right? How can you say I'm becoming humble? Then you're not. But Prabhupada's saying you do have to take some objective position and look at yourself. Well, actually, am I walking around the temple thinking, hello, Mahatma's here. Didn't you notice? Is that how I'm thinking when I'm coming, when I'm in the association of devotees? Or am I leading a kirtan and thinking, okay, I'm ready for the praise, the kirtan's over. You can line up right here and praise me. Is that how I'm thinking? Or I give a class, or whatever it is I do. Is that how I'm thinking? We have to look and see. That's objective. We can't say, well, it would be false humility to say, no, I'm aloof from this desire. But there has to be some objective way to look. Right? You have to look at yourself. Prabhupada's asking. So now I wanted to read these qualities. And what I would like you to do, or what I suggest we do, is just let these, just imbibe, just feel these qualities. Just as I read them, feel what they're like. And feel how you feel when I read them. Because some of the qualities I'm going to read are qualities in which maybe you feel you're lacking, and when I read them, you're probably not going to feel good. You're going to feel, oh, I don't have that one. So just allow yourself to feel. Or you're going to hear a quality and think, yes, that quality, I'm attracted to that. So don't analyze, just kind of see how you feel when I read these qualities. And these qualities are very inspiring. So these are the 26. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhilila. I don't have the verse offhand. I think it's, anybody know? Chapter 26, I think. These qualities, the devotee doesn't have 26, he has more. These are prominent, 26 prominent qualities. Kind to everyone. And you could, when you're hearing them, you can kind of think in your life of incidents when you were kind and maybe weren't kind. Do a quick analysis here of the 26 qualities. I'll leave a few seconds after I read so you can contemplate. Kind to everyone. I'll read it twice. And I'll emphasize certain words. Kind to everyone. Does not quarrel with anyone. Does not quarrel with anyone. Fixed up in the absolute truth. Fixed up in the absolute truth. Equal to everyone. Equal to everyone. Spotless. Spotless. Faultless. Faultless. Charitable, mild. Okay, and this next one, I want you to visualize your room, what it looks like right now. Clean. Simple. Simple means straightforward. What you see is what you get. Non-pretentious. Benevolent, peaceful, something goes wrong, still he remains peaceful, completely attached to Krishna, no material hankerings, meek, steady, self-controlled. Does not eat more than required. Sane. Respectful. Humble. Grave. Compassionate. Friendly. Poetic. Expert. Silent. I know when I used to read these qualities, I used to think, yes, here's a quality of, these are the qualities of the pure devotees, and I didn't think that I was supposed to manifest these. Now, if you look at your life, and you think about these qualities, and you understand, devotee means sadhu bhushana, one who is endowed with the qualities of sadhu, or ratna bhushana, as Prabhupada said, he's trying to make us all diamonds. And you start to look at your activities, particularly you will see that most of these qualities manifest in interactions, in relationships. Now that's where the real test is in manifesting the qualities of Vaishnava in terms of relationships. To honor, to be respectful, to be appreciative. For those you don't naturally honor, respect, and feel appreciation for. This is the challenge. But if you begin to look at your life and see how you are and are not manifesting these qualities, it becomes more evident what you're not. And it becomes easier to be more conscious or more able to manifest these qualities because you'll begin to catch yourself. When I began doing this, the first thing I noticed is when I was in a situation that was very frustrating, the thought would come to me, is Krishna is now giving you a wonderful opportunity to practice tolerance. Whereas previously I might have just become upset and say, you idiot, why did you do that? Of course, this you don't do this, but I'm American, so I do this. You idiot, don't you have, this is what we do in America. You idiot, why did you do this? Don't you have a brain? If you had a brain, you'd be dangerous. So this is, you know, these are the samskaras we receive from our friends growing up in America. So this is the tendency to respond. But if we want to respond as a Vaishnava, then we have to see, okay, I'm being disturbed by this situation. Someone has done something which I view or I judge as not an intelligent action. I'm not in a position to instruct this person. So now, a higher consciousness thought is, Krishna is giving me an opportunity to practice tolerance. Right? That's it. Natural instinctive response is to become upset, especially when you're married. This is such a, you know, you think, well, it's okay to not be a Vaishnava at home. I'll just yell at my husband or wife. It's weird. It's actually weird if you think about it. It's one of the weirdest things. If you meditate on it, it becomes more and more weird the more you think about it. Why do I have the right to not act like a Vaishnava with a person that's probably one of the most dear people to me in my life? It doesn't make any sense. Or a god brother that you're living in the same room with and you're very dear, very close with. Doesn't make sense. So this is the conditioned response, the pulling of the senses, and then the devotee think, and then we think, so often we think, but I'm just responding, this is who I am, this is how I am. It's not the way Prabhupada wants us to be. And it's not the way we are going to attract the world, the Krishna consciousness. To actually think about it, How do we attract people to Krishna consciousness? We might think we attract them by preaching. Okay, you can attract them by preaching. Bring them to the temple. Everybody's fighting. Are they going to stay? Of course not. But you bring them to the temple and one devotee saying, Prabhu, please excuse me, I had a bad thought about you and I just want to apologize. And the devotee saying, oh Prabhu, you know, I am so rotten. You know, to not have bad thoughts about me is nearly impossible. And these exchanges are going on and these people are seeing this. They're not going to see this anywhere else. But if they see the same thing that they see outside and they think, it's worse because we're claiming to be Brahmins. At least people outside, they don't claim, right? They just claim to be materialists. So if they don't exhibit these qualities, people think, yeah, what do you expect? But in the society of devotees, then these qualities should be manifest. Now, I'll leave you with this final thought. Unfortunately, we don't have 4 hours, which is about as much time as I need to cover this. But Mahatma Gandhi once was known to have said, my life is my message. I thought, that's interesting. I thought, but his life is not only his message, everybody's life is their message. So I got inspired and I made a t-shirt. And I have the t-shirt. I could have worn it to class, but you might have thought it was a bit corny. But I made a t-shirt for my japa retreat. I have 11 t-shirts I wear in my japa retreats, and they're all the things I teach, so people can see what I'm teaching. It's written all over me. So I made a t-shirt and said, your life is your message, what is your message? So our life is our message. You can't avoid teaching through your life. Our life is our message. It's just what it is. And so Prabhupada wanted us to teach a message through our qualities. He wanted us, despite the fact that I become easily upset, despite the fact that I'm an intolerant person, despite the fact that I'm a lusty person, despite the fact that I battle with the mode of ignorance every day, Prabhupada wanted to rise above that. And if you doubt it, if you study Prabhupada's teachings very carefully, a lot of times he didn't give mystical formulas how to rise above the modes of nature. He just said, do it. That was his intention. Prabhupada, how do I become sincere? Be sincere. I don't know if I'm sincere. You should know if you're sincere. Prabhupada, I'm weak. I can't follow the principles. Why are you giving into weakness? That's it. You. Why are you giving in? Prabhupada, I'm weak. He didn't accept excuses. That's the mind. I'm weak, I can't do it. I'm just an agitated person, I get angry. So what example do we have? The passenger is the soul, right? If the soul doesn't tell the driver where to go, the driver is going to go wherever he wants, right? The taxi driver in Calcutta has got, you know, he wants to see his cousin and he knows that you don't know anything about Calcutta and he's going the wrong way and you don't tell him. That's not the way he goes where he wants to go. Yes or yes? So that's how Prabhupada instructed us. He said, basically, he said, look it, who's in charge? Who's in charge here? Could you imagine you got upset with a devotee, that devotee went to Prabhupada and said, this so-and-so yelled at me and got mad at me and this, and then you had to go to Prabhupada and explain why. And you said, well, Prabhupada, I had a bad childhood. You wouldn't say that. Well, Prabhupada, I have a very agitated mind. Well, Prabhupada, I took a lot of drugs when I was a teen. You wouldn't say any of that. What would you say? You'd say, I'm sorry, it was my fault, and I won't do it again. Because you know that's what Prabhupada would expect of you, right? So we don't realize that often that we have the power to control ourselves, and therefore we give in to the condition. And Prabhupada is, no. This is the training. And if you study this, it said, It said, why does a devotee have good qualities? Because there's that verse, yasasti bhakti bhagavati kinchana. In the second half, he said, the non-devotee doesn't have any good qualities, which is a very heavy thing to say. Manoratena sadato davato bahi. He said, because they're on the mental platform, because they're thinking about themselves. What do I want? What do I don't want? You know, there was this big mafioso. They finally caught him after like 40 years, and he was famous for being very well dressed, worth, you know, these $10,000 suits. And you'd see him going to court, you know, best dressed man in the world. I don't know his name. Does anybody know? Any Italians here? Vince Bulani? What?
John Gotti.
John Gotti. So, he's got this beautiful suit of clothes, right? Beautiful suit of clothes. And the guy's number one rascal. So he's decorated, so, you know, it's like these decorations of so-called good qualities on the bodies of people who are not devotees. So Prabhupada said, mental platform, because they're accepting and rejecting on the basis of what they want and don't want. He said, but the devotee's on the spiritual platform, and on the spiritual platform, that's where all the good qualities develop. And that's why a devotee has all good qualities, because he's on the spiritual platform, and the soul has all the good qualities. So, please don't make excuses. Excuse just means we're on the material platform. We need to come to the spiritual platform. That's the process. And don't give in to the conditioning. You are beyond the conditioning. You tell your mind where to go. You tell the driver. Right? So, that's what Prabhupada wants. Why are you giving into weakness? That's it. Just do it. That's how Prabhupada trained us. So, we have a little time, I guess. I don't know. Do we? Well, if you want to stay, we do, I guess. And if you don't, you can leave. Yes? Yes, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, I just wanted to ask you about the term manga.
The term?
Manga. When you accepted Prabhupada's advice not to be a rock and roll devotee, followed him. My question is, if management is providing you an advice, and you know that they've got all the right intentions, but you're kind of like attached to like choice number two, but both choices are connected to Krishna. How does, I guess, one acknowledges that you're not, avoiding that term manga or accepting and
Oh yeah, very good question. This is actually a subtle question. He's asking, let's say, you're attached to doing something, and the management wants you to do something different. And how do you know? Maybe choice two is actually better? Could be. Right?
Well, you kind of like feel this strong connection to choice number two.
Yeah, yeah. So, that'll require another 4 hours to answer that question, because you can answer it both ways. And those who know me know that I never answer things the way you think they should be answered. So I'll answer it the way you think it. I won't answer it the way you should think it. I won't answer it the way you think it should be answered, because you already know the textbook answer, which is to do what your authority says. But sometimes we get inspired by Krishna, and we're so much connected and inspired to a particular service that we may feel that this is really the best thing for me. And if we can be detached enough to look at it from a detached perspective and determine, is it really true? Is this really what Krishna wants me to do? Now, I can only speak of my own. All right, I'll speak about myself, and then you could determine. In the early days of the movement, there was always a need, well, not in the early days, there still is. There's always a need for people to manage. So, if you're not trying to fight it off, you end up in a position of management if you've been around long enough. And in the early days, long was 6 months. Or 8 months. So after 8 months, I was made temple president. So I found that after a few years of managing, I hit a point where I was just like, to put it in an emotional way, blah. It just felt like, blah. Me and management are like, you know, let's go to sleep, you know. So, but because there was a need, a few years later, I ended up again as temple president. And then a few years later, I started feeling, as I just told you, I got the blahs. It seemed like I would recuperate from the blahs and forget, and then again, I would manage another temple. But the last temple I managed, I got such a severe case of blahs, I made a vow that I would never get the blahs again. That was in 1992, and I'm happy to say I've stuck to that vow. And it was at that time, I have to go back, when I was a young devotee, brahmacharya, I used to have visions of living in Mayapur and teaching classrooms full of devotees. I was a sankirtan leader, you know, going out all day in sankirtan and being wild. But I had these visions of living in Mayapur teaching hundreds of students shastra. That's what I was. That's what I would dream. I was sankirtan leader, but that's what I would dream about. So finally, in 1992, I said, that's it. I'm finished with the blahs. Every time I manage, after 2 years, I get burned out. I said, what's the point? I'm just going to teach. That's what I want to do. I want to teach. And I've been teaching ever since, and I'm happy to say I haven't got the case of the blahs yet. I'm still going strong, and I haven't burned out. So that was a realization over years and years of looking, doing the needful, finally realizing I think this is what Prabhupada wants me to do. Because when I do this, this is where my energy is. I go on, and every time I manage, after 2 years, I leave. I get tired of it. And I'm not that great anyway. I mean, if I was some super manager, maybe I would be more confused about it. But I'm not. Now, I like to do music also. But I realize that that's not as important as the teaching. So Everybody says, where's your next CD? I said, well, I started it in 2001. And I haven't finished it yet. Why? Because it's not a priority. But it's almost done. It's almost been done for the last 4 years. I mean, it's coming. But the priority is teaching, because I realized, so that's me. It was, you know, Krishna was revealing it very strongly in me, that this is what I should do. And I don't regret doing it. And I think it's a service that's needed, and it's helping. And people tell me it's helping. So.
Thank you, Mara. Thank you.
So if you want to leave, please leave. I won't feel offended. I don't want to hold anybody here. And if you want to stay, then I'll take more questions. Yes. Rupa Anuga. Jai. Ah, very good. I'll repeat the question. Sidwin, you've been, as an older devotee, sometimes you'll hear someone explaining what Prabhupada said, and you'll think, I know better than this other devotee. Well, I think there's two aspects. One aspect is, you may know better. But it doesn't mean you need to become puffed up about it. So that's one side of it, right? You know, or like, because sometimes you know better, but you can't do anything other than apply that know better to yourself. You can't enforce it on anybody. So in a way you say, according to me, my understanding, how I apply it in my life, it seems that this understanding is better for me. And without any kind of feeling superior to anybody else. And in recognition, there may be more than one understanding also. I think your question is a broader question, really, how do I remain humble? Because it's said that the people who have the most difficult time remaining humble are the ones who have the best qualities. Isn't that interesting? The people who have the most difficult time being humble are the ones with the best qualities, because they're actually quality people. The more intelligent you are, the more challenged you are to remain humble, because you'll think, I know more, I know better. So I think it's really a question of respecting the opinions of others, respecting the realizations of others, and at the same time, going with your own realization and saying, this is how I see it, it applies to me. Just like, because we're all growing and maturing, it's not to say that 10 years from now you won't have the view of the other person. And I'll tell you a funny story. This is funny, funny, funny. You want to hear it? It's not funny, laughable. It's just amazing. In 1982, in the movement here at the Maya Professor in 1982, there was a big schism because one of the spiritual masters had decided he wanted to leave the movement and go to the Mott and join Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother. And at that time, up to 1982, many devotees were going to hear from Sridhar Maharaj. And I had many friends that had heard from Sridhar Maharaj and told me many things that he had said. And at that time, going and staying in his Mott was not at all controversial. So I went there and I stayed in his Mott for a week and I heard from him. And I was actually on the very, as a side point, I was actually very, how should I say, I was frustrated with ISKCON. I was on the edges. And after staying there, I became more dedicated to ISKCON after hearing him speak. And people would say, you know, it's going to be the opposite. Anyway, that wasn't the funny part. But so while I'm staying over there, I had no idea that this huge controversy is going on here. I mean, it was major. I mean, Jayatirtha was leaving ISKCON and about 80 of his disciples were going, or 100 or 200. I mean, temples were, you know, people were leaving temples. Heads of departments were leaving temples. Those who were in England was being devastated. So many disciples were leaving. I had no idea. I was just at the Mott, you know, just hearing some katha with my godbrothers. So as soon as I came on the property here, I was greeted and brought into the brainwashing room. And the funny thing is that the person who brainwashed me said, don't ever go there again, don't ever listen to Sridhar Maharaj, don't read his books. The person who brainwashed me became later on one of the most staunch followers of Sridhar Maharaj, and still is today, and left ISKCON and became his follower. So the viewpoint that you have now may not be the viewpoint that you have 10 years from now also. And so I think the humble position is to respect others' viewpoint, that's their realization, that's their viewpoint, and that it works for them. And maybe they'll have your viewpoint in future, maybe you'll have their viewpoint, or maybe because we're different, we'll keep our same viewpoints, but it works for us. Because we're all so conditioned, we're all so different. And when you go to different countries and see how people do different things, and you can't figure out why they do it that way, but it works for them. I got myself into all kinds of trouble managing in foreign countries. They didn't do things the way Americans did it. They were about to, you know, have a mutiny and, you know, throw me off the ship because I wanted to do it the American way. And the American way would have worked better if they could do it, but they couldn't do it because it's not the way they thought. And they were, you know, doing things according to me. They were messing things up. No, you do it this way. This your system doesn't work. But they couldn't do my system. So therefore my system was wrong in that situation. And I came to realize that their system was better because they could work that system. Anything else? Yes, Genevieve.
I just wanted
to share
My Guru Maharaj Mukunda Goswami told me that Srila Prabhupada actually told him to write the 26 qualities of the devotee on a piece of paper and hang it on his wall, and to, you know, actually look at those qualities and one by one try to you know, imbibe those qualities.
Right, right.
So that was an instruction from Srila Prabhupada that I want to share.
That's such a nice point, because otherwise we just wait for them to develop, and we think, well, they'll just develop. You know what's really interesting? If you think about this verse, it says all good qualities will develop. Then you could ask the question, then why did we take a vow, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling? We should only have had to take the vow of 16 rounds because the other things would automatically develop. But that's not the case. You have to work on those. And as Janmashtami said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said in Bhajan Rahasa, you have to work on your anarthas. You can't just think, I'll do the positive and it'll come. But you have to see how it's coming. And that is, and then someone could say, but it's only by bhakti that they come, but manifesting those qualities in your interactions is part of bhakti, isn't it? Isn't being humble part of bhakti? Isn't being tolerant part of bhakti? Trinadapi sunichena. Isn't offering respects part of bhakti? Isn't being charlatta, straightforward, not duplicitous? Isn't that part of bhakti? So acting upon those qualities is the practice of bhakti. You can't say, I'll act on those qualities when I get it. That wouldn't make sense, would it? It's like japa. I don't want to chant, but I chant, and I'll get a taste. I can't expect the taste to come if I don't chant. Right? So, we want to send this nice message out, right, to the world. Right? And what's the message? Sadhu Bhushana. Here's a sadhu. You know, because people want sadhus, don't they? Don't they? Don't they really want, you know, like if someone's looking for spiritual life and they see a sadhu, wow, that's it. So if we all become sadhus, then they'll get to meet more than one. Right? Did you have? Yes.
Everyone equal.
Yes.
So, of course, after reading Srila Prabhupada's books, we understand that we have everybody's spirit same and there is nothing special about us or anybody.
Right.
But still, there are some special people in our life, like Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj.
Yes,
like that.
Yes.
We have some speciality. We can't see everybody equal in that sense.
So Prabhupada said equal means. We are compassionate on everyone, and we equally want to give everyone Krishna consciousness. That's our equality. Prabhupada was asked about his equality, and it appeared to one person that Prabhupada was distinguishing. And Prabhupada said, I am not Samadarshana. He said, I am not on that level. He said, my Samadarshana is that I want everyone to take to Krishna consciousness. And then that man realized that that was real. That was the real Samadarshana. And it's interesting because Prabhupada said, without becoming compassionate, you can't be a Vaishnava. So like if you look at all the 26 qualities, it really, aside from complete surrender to Krishna, which is the main thing, the quality of compassion, that's what distinguishes. That's the real quality of the Vaishnava. I was listening to this morning walk. It was amazing. And Prabhupada was saying, why are we taking so much inconvenience? He said, I could have just stayed in Vrindavan. Why am I taking so much inconvenience? And he said very feelingly, and you could really feel it in his voice, in his intonation, he said, because we feel for the suffering of the conditioned souls. This is why we're doing it. It's like, wow, you could feel Prabhupada's feelings. So that's Vaishnava. And that's equal vision. We want to give Krishna to everybody. And Prabhupada, you know, and that's it. When you feel that, and just like the other day, the devotee was feeling about, oh, the cows are being slaughtered. But that's natural. A devotee feels like that. What can we do? Feel. Yeah. Anything else? You're getting hungry? Yes.
Since we were speaking about Gandhiji, I was wondering if Gandhi... I actually know that he was for Daivi Varnashram, but he didn't...
Yes.
Really know about the change, I mean, that in Kali Yuga everybody is a Shudra, but I think he was thinking that it is through seminal birth that one is supposed to be a Brahmana.
Through seminal? I don't know. Prabhupada liked Gandhi in terms of his social philosophy, but he didn't like him in terms of his spiritual philosophy, and I'll tell a story and then we'll end. And then if you want to stay again after we end, some can stay, but I think we should officially end. Prabhupada was in his room with a devotee named Bhagavat, and he was glorifying Gandhi's system of social organization, you know, the village system. You know, produce everything locally, cottage industry. And he was just going on and glorifying that whole system. And Prabhupada said, I love Gandhi, I love Gandhi, I love this whole system. And then it's just going on and on and on. So then, the next day, that devotee was with Prabhupada and some other guests and or some people that met Prabhupada on the beach while they were walking. And they were walking on the beach, and down the beach there was a statue of Gandhi. And Prabhupada just laid in and criticized Gandhi, left and right, Gandhi this, Gandhi that. Because Gandhi, ultimately, he didn't really accept Krishna. He didn't believe in Krishna. Actually, in one commentary he said, if Krishna is God, then I don't want to be called a Hindu. You know, he was really off there. So, he was, as we say in America, smashing. He was smashing Gandhi. And while he was doing it, he was looking at the devotee and he was smiling. Because he was just glorifying Gandhi the night before. So he liked Gandhi in the social, from the social point of view of his social philosophy. But not spiritual philosophy. So I think we should end. If anyone else has any other questions, you can come here because I don't want to hold everybody up. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.